I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World podcast. This is an everyday kind of a practical show done by really an everyday guy like me. Thanks for tuning in, folks. I'm going to talk about handgun fit in this episode. Primarily, there are a couple of other things I'm going to get into, but mainly I'm going to talk about handgun fit. I do want to say that I have an unfortunate announcement to make, and that is I am not going to be able to go to Alaska at the end of June with Ben Branham to teach Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. I'm disappointed. I regret to say that. I hope you're going to understand why. I'm going to go ahead and explain it to you, why I can't do that. I have a trade show for my real day job that I have to go to. It's mandatory. Can't miss that trade show. And if I go to that trade show and then the next day go to Alaska and be up there for 4 or 5 days, that means that I'll be away from my family, away from my wife, for about 6 out of 8 days. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen? I can't do that. I can't do that to them. That's not what God wants me to do. They need me. My wife needs me with her struggles, with her health struggles. She needs me. And my son needs me. So it's family first. That's what the Lord wants. That's what I want. And above all else, family and health come first. And I'm still not quite strong enough to be able to withstand that much traveling in a 7 or 8 day period also. I'm still having to make sure that I get plenty of rest and that I maintain my recovery, which by the time that I release this podcast, I will probably have the results on my PET scan and pray that that is negative. Pray that that PET scan is negative and that there is still no more cancer in my body. So that's why I can't go up there and teach. I very much apologize to the students that were expecting me to be there. They have all been notified. Ben Branham is going up to teach the class. He's going to be there. And, you know, Ben is a terrific trainer. You know, you're going to get just as much out of the class with Ben teaching it by himself. He's awesome. You're going to like it. So all the students have been notified, and the hosts have been notified. And you know, go to the class and still sign up. If you're still thinking about signing up, the end of June, the last weekend in June, Beyond Concealed Carry, 2-day enhanced class in Alaska, you're going to like it. And by the end of June, weather should be real good. And, oh, man, I can't tell you how disappointed I am that I don't get to do this. But when I set this up, I didn't know about the trade show. I didn't know about the trade show. We set this class up a long time ago, and I wasn't paying attention. Well, actually, I don't even think that our industry had set up the trade show, or if they did, I wasn't notified. Perhaps there was a chance I might not have even been paying attention, but normally I plan things out pretty far in advance, and I don't think that I was even notified of when the trade show was going to be. So again, my sincere apologies. Having said that, Ben and I have decided to schedule an advanced Beyond Concealed Carry in San Antonio. People have been asking us to do more San Antonio classes again. And of course, I don't have to travel for that. I live in the San Antonio area. So we did. We set up a 1-day on September 17th, Saturday at Lone Star Handgun. Lone Star Handgun, which is near I-10 and 1604. Near I-10 and 1604. Lone Star Handgun. It's from 9 to 5, September 17th. It's Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced. So that means you have to have either been through Beyond Concealed Carry or another class with a reputable instructor, like a Masada Yub class, or like a Suarez International class, or Tom Givens, or Rob Pincus, or any of the other, you know, Carl Wren, Kay KT training, whatever. You know, John Farnham, whatever training classes, or even if you have some good local trainers. It doesn't have to be somebody who's on the national training circuit. If you've taken a class with a local trainer and you got a certificate, and you can at least tell us a little bit about the class, then you qualify for taking our advanced class. What we're trying to say is we can't have anybody taking their first handgun training class coming to our Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced. We can't do that because we start off right away with some skills that you've got to have your gun handling skills down for you to be able to perform and do what we're going to teach you safely. But if you want to learn things like the basics of point shooting and one-handed shooting and one-handed gun manipulations and close quarters combat and things like that, you want to learn that, sign up. It's $250 for the day. Ben and I will both be there. If you're an early bird, you can sign up by July 31st. It's $200. So go to handgunworld.com. There'll be a registration link. If you click the training classes page at handgunworld.com, the training classes page, you will see it listed there. You'll see it Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced September 17th, Lone Star Handgun Shooting Range in San Antonio, Texas. Myself and Ben Branham, instructors. Okay, just a quick sound effect, and I'll get into the main topic on handgun fit. Okay, just a little correction on something I said in the last episode. This little segment that I'm recording right here, I am in the Handgun World mobile studio coming back from a business trip, and I don't know where I'm going to put this in terms of what part of the episode. It might even be a special middle-of-the-week episode. If it's not a middle-of-the-week episode, I'll sandwich it in somewhere into the normal weekly episode that releases normally on Sunday mornings. Anyway, last week I was talking about taking different sight pictures depending on what kind of shooting you're doing. I was talking about the carbine class, the AR-15 M4 rifle gunfighting class that I took that John Payne from Suarez International taught. And I made a little bit of an error, so let me correct it. If you're going to shoot a double tap, in other words, if you're going to fire and then fire again, in other words, it's, you know, two fairly quick shots, you're going to take one sight picture, press the trigger, another sight picture, press the trigger again, and now another sight picture. So to make sure that you're following through on every sight, or on every shot, follow through on every shot, and make sure that you get a good sight picture each time. And practice that and do that as fast as you can. You can do that same thing with a handgun as well. All right, that keeps you as accurate as possible. If you're going to do a hammer pair, in other words, you're going to get a sight picture, press the trigger fast twice, two real quick shots, and then another sight picture. Okay, and while you're firing twice real fast, you need to be controlling your gun, either your pistol or your rifle, and you need to be seeing that front sight as much as you can. Now, all this is assuming that you're using sighted fire. Most of us probably know at real close distances, you're very likely not going to be sighted fire. Matter of fact, sometimes you shouldn't use sighted fire. Oh, Bob, did you just say that? Yeah, I just said that. Think about this. What if you're about 5 feet away from your attacker? 5 feet. Feet. And let's say you're using a pistol or a handgun or a revolver. You're 5 feet away. Okay, you don't want to extend your arms to full extension with a handgun in your hand. If you extend your arms are what? Maybe 2.5 feet long? You know, 2.25 feet? You know, think about that. So now your pistol is just a couple feet away from your attacker. Why would you want to put the handgun that close to your attacker? Because now you've just made it very easy for him to take that gun away from you and disarm you. Think about that. Be careful of some of the bad habits that you learn from other trainers, other teachers, even competition matches. I'm a big fan of shooting competition. But I can tell you that you can really build some bad habits in competition shooting. And experienced competition shooters, they don't normally have a lot of bad habits because they've, you know, let's say, and a lot of times in IDPA and USPSA, you will have a target that will be, you know, very close quarters combat targets. And you might only be 5 feet away from the target, 6 feet away maybe. Okay, 2 yards. Or maybe even like 2.5, 3 yards. You'll see the experienced competition shooters, they'll point shoot that. They're not going to extend their arms, and they're not going to extend to full extension and get a sight picture and shoot that. They don't need to. They can be accurate enough point shooting at that distance. But you'll see beginners, they'll extend all the way out. They'll extend their arms all the way out and get a good sight picture and then press the trigger. And of course, they're going to be a lot slower than the experienced shooters who point shoot those targets. And the same thing is in real life. And, you know, a lot of times in regular defensive training, either with a rifle or a handgun, you'll see the same thing. I've seen it all the time as an instructor. I've seen beginners, when they're real close to the target, unless we teach them otherwise, they'll stick that pistol out there, and that pistol will be 2 feet in front of the target, and they're pressing the trigger. It's because they just don't know any different. And the old saying that, you know, you don't know what you don't know. You know, a gun disarm is not that difficult to do if you're real close to somebody. And most bad guys probably know how to do it. And it's not very smart. You know, in Hollywood, you see a lot of junk, like someone pointing a pistol and putting the muzzle of the pistol right on the side of someone's head. Or right on their forehead, right? You know, you see all that junk in Hollywood. That's Hollywood, folks. That's the movies. That's not reality. Don't ever do that. Unless you can avoid it. Now, if you have to press the pistol up against their body, you know, maybe because they're laying on top of you or whatever, if you have to do that, do it. But keep in mind, with a semi-automatic pistol, it's also very easy to cause a malfunction if you're doing that, if you're doing a contact shot. Of course, that is an advantage that revolvers have. But if at all possible, you don't want to do that. If you've got even just a little bit of distance, don't do that. Don't hand the bad guy your gun to take it out of your hand, to disarm you. Don't do that. It's, you know, if you come to advanced classes that we teach you firearms disarming techniques. We teach you gun disarming techniques. We teach you pretty easy and pretty effective techniques on taking a gun away from somebody that's pointing a gun at you at a close distance. We'll teach you how to do that. It won't take long. You know, in about an hour, hour and a half, you'll learn how to do it. And with a lot of practice, safe practice, preferably with a blue gun or a red gun or a training gun or a gun with a training barrel in it, it's not going to take you very long to at least be able to get that pistol away from you and ensure that the bad guy is not pointing it at you. In most cases, you can take that gun away from him and possibly even use his own gun on him. So, folks, don't do that. So getting back to my point, assuming you're using sighted fire and you're using a rifle or a pistol, getting the different sight pictures, and it's actually trying to get the same sight picture, keeping your sights on target, your front sight especially, make sure you get that last sight picture after you fired what you believe is your last shot. That is going to help you concentrate on your accuracy, your follow-through. That's all very, very important. I mean, think about it. If you're a golfer, the follow-through is important. If you're a tennis player, the follow-through is important. If you're a baseball player and you're trying to hit a baseball that's been pitched 95 miles an hour, all the mechanics of your swing matter, don't they? And by the way, you know, I've brought this up on podcasts before, but since I'm talking about like a baseball player, a batter hitting a baseball, a small baseball that's going 90 miles an hour, isn't that hand-eye coordination, folks? Are there any sights on the bat? Are there any sights on the baseball? How about a tennis player that's hitting a ball, a professional tennis player hitting a ball that's been served to him at 100 miles an hour? Isn't he or she pretty much using hand-eye coordination? Think about it. They put their body in a certain position. Their hands and their eyes coordinate together. All that comes together for them to return that tennis ball. They don't have the time. When that ball is traveling in 100 miles an hour, they don't have the time to make sure everything is lining up properly. They do that reflexively. They do it reflexively. It's instinct. Why? And how are they able to do that? How are they able to do it without any sights on the bat? Without any sights on the tennis racket? Without any sights on the golf club or the golf ball? How can they do that? They do it because they've done it tens of thousands of times. And folks, shooting is no different. A lot of people, unfortunately, they use sights as a crutch. Okay, they feel like they cannot make a shot unless their sights are right on target. Unless that front sight is lined up perfectly with the rear notch and everything is lined up exactly right and it's pointing right on the target where they want that bullet to go. Well, there's just no way to hit it. That's what people think. Now, if you're trying to shoot a nice tight group, then that's the case. You got to make sure your sights are lined up perfectly, that you're holding the gun perfectly still, that you have a nice, smooth trigger squeeze so that you don't bring that front sight off target at all. And yes, you'll shoot your nice, small groups. You'll shoot them at whatever distance that you want pretty well, pretty much, depending on your skill level. But that's not real gunfighting, folks. And you know what? Defending yourself with a gun, any gun, rifle, shotgun, pistol, that's gunfighting. All right? That's gunfighting. You may not want to admit it, but guess what? It's gunfighting. And so you need to learn to be able to make quality hits. I'm not talking about misses. I'm not talking about the spray and pray method. You know, a lot of people criticize point shooting and they say, oh, well, those people, all they do is they just spray and pray. And that's not safe and it's not effective and blah, 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 blah. If you learn the art of point shooting, instinctive shooting, whatever name you want to give it, if you learn the art and you learn the craft and you practice it well over and over and over again and you practice it as many times as the baseball players practice hitting a baseball, you will make some pretty accurate hits at close ranges, at 2 yards, 3 yards, 5 yards, even 7 yards. And I'm not just pulling this out of my rear end. I've taught people to do this. So I have seen it happen. I've seen people, matter of fact, some of you listening to this podcast right now, you've been through some of the classes. Some of the classes that I've taught through Suarez International, some of the classes that Ben and I have taught together, you've been through them. And remember, at the beginning of the class, I said, we're going to have you doing things and making hits that you didn't believe was possible for you to do. And we're going to have you doing it by the end of the class. And weren't we correct? We had you doing it because you learned the techniques and you learned how to do it. So anyway, I wanted to make that correction about the sight pictures. I think I said that a little bit wrong in the last episode. So there you go. There's my correction and my further explanation of what I meant in the last episode. Now, I want to transition here into talking about handgun fit. Because that's going to be one of the major topics of this episode. Like I said, I don't know if this is going to be a middle of the week episode, because I'm thinking about doing a show that comes out on Wednesdays or Thursday mornings. I'm thinking about doing that, not regularly, but occasionally, like maybe twice a month. I'm thinking about putting out a podcast in the middle of the week, a short one, just a very short one, not a full-length normal episode. So this might be that, but I want to talk about handgun fit. I believe that there are a lot of misconceptions about handgun fit. You know, you hear this and you see this all the time, don't you? Oh, the gun just doesn't fit my hand. And people think they can't shoot it because it doesn't fit their hand. Now, first of all, let's talk about what handgun fit is, or at least what I think handgun fit is. The conventional wisdom has a lot to do with trigger reach. In other words, when you put that handgun, when you put your hand on the handgun, if you're doing it properly, can you reach the trigger with your trigger finger? And by reaching the trigger, that means, you know, you shouldn't have to shift the handgun to a different position in order for you to reach the trigger. If that's the case, then it doesn't fit your hand. Now, that doesn't mean you can't shoot it and shoot it well. Let's not equate those two. Let's not equate a gun that doesn't fit your hand. Let's not equate that with a gun that you can't shoot. Because here, again, I'm gonna bust what I think is a myth. I've seen lots of people shoot a gun that doesn't fit their hand, and they shoot it well, and they're accurate, and they're good with it, because they just learn how to do it. They figure it out. Okay, now you shouldn't have to do that. If you have a hand size, and when you put your hand on the gun, and the gun is big, and there's a long reach to the trigger, and you can't properly reach it. In other words, if you can't get a good portion of your trigger finger on that trigger, then that gun is too big for you. It does not fit your hand. Once again, doesn't mean you can't shoot it. I'm going to get to that in a few minutes. So can you reach the trigger? Now, I've heard people say, well, can you put a pencil between the gun frame and your trigger finger? Can you fit that pencil in there comfortably? And if you can do that, then the gun fits your hand. Yeah, all right. That might be one way to figure it out. Or some people say, well, can you see some daylight? Can you see some daylight between your trigger finger when it's resting on the trigger and the frame? And if so, it fits your hand well enough. Eh, that might be true also. Here's what I say. Can you get your finger on the trigger up to the first joint on your trigger finger? Now, I'm not saying that every time you're going to use the first joint on your trigger finger to press the trigger. That is a good technique to learn, and that is a good way to really control a trigger. If you can do that, and you want to learn how to do that, and learn how to, and if you can do the reach that with your handgun. But it fits your hand if you can get that first joint. So take your trigger finger and look at the first joint in your finger, and if you can get at least that much on the trigger, then the gun's fitting you pretty well. On a Glock, actually pretty much on any semi-automatic pistol, I can do that. I have relatively long fingers. Okay? I don't have big meaty hands, but I got some relatively long fingers. Glocks happen to fit me real well. M&Ps fit me real well. My SIG Legion 229, that doesn't fit me as well as a Glock, but or as well as an M&P, but it fits me okay. I can still get enough finger on the trigger without having to shift the gun position in my hand. In other words, I've got my hand right behind that gun. Exactly, you know, 180 degrees behind that gun. I don't have to turn my hand to the right or to the left at all to be able to... Well, for me, I'm a right-handed shooter. So some right-handed shooters, if they can't reach the trigger, they have to position the gun a little bit to their left to be able to reach the trigger. That's not my issue. Now, I've seen small people with small hands shoot a Glock 19 or a Glock 17 perfectly. I've seen 14-year-old boys and girls without very big hands shoot a Glock just fine. My son's one of them. When he was 13, his hands weren't very big yet, and he was shooting my Glock 19 just fine. Just fine. I've seen small women at competition matches that have Glocks, and they shoot them just fine. SIGs. I remember one time I saw a small woman with pretty small hands, and she had a SIG 220 at a competition match. That's a 45 caliber double action, single action SIG Sauer pistol, the SIG 220, and she was shooting lights out with that thing. Now her hands were small. Her hands were small, but she worked it out. You could say, well, that gun doesn't fit her hand. And you know what? You'd probably be right. That gun doesn't fit her hand, according to the definition of what fits your hand. But she was working it out. She figured out how to shoot it, how to make that gun shoot the way she wanted it to. So you can figure it out, folks. All right? You can do it. You know, it's kind of like if you ride a bike that's too big for you. Okay? It might not be as easy as riding a bike that fits you, but you can figure it out as long as it's not way too big. You know, it's not, as long as you're not putting a 5-year-old on a bike with 28-inch wheels or something like that. All right? That's over-exaggerating my point. But let's say somebody should have a bike with 24-inch wheels, and you put them on a 26 or even a 28, you know, they're probably going to be all right. So this woman, this little, she looked like she was in her late teens, early 20s. I'm talking, this was like 4 or 5 years ago at an IDPA match. And when I learned that she had a SIG 220, I was amazed. I was like, really? Wow. I've seen ladies shoot Glocks just fine. You know what? Gun not fitting your hand is a very common excuse for people's poor shooting. It is. Now, am I saying that you shouldn't get a gun? Am I saying you shouldn't worry about hand fit? No, I'm not saying that. If you get a gun and it does properly fit your hand, you can reach the trigger fine, and you can shoot it well, and you like that gun, then by all means, get that gun. You know, there are other guns. Here's what I'll say. There are other guns that fit my hand better than a Glock. There are. There's other guns. M&Ps fit my hand better than a Glock. XDs fit my hand better. Any 1911 fits my hand better. But I don't carry those guns. You know why? Because the Glock also fits me well enough. I don't have to, like I said, I don't have to reposition the pistol in order to be able to properly press the trigger. And there are many, many other advantages about the Glock pistols for me that I like, that are just as important to me in selecting a concealed carry handgun. I've mentioned them countless times in previous episodes. So go back and listen to some of my older episodes if you don't know what I'm talking about. And speaking of older episodes, about once a month, I publish an older episode that does not appear on the iTunes feed or most of the podcatcher feeds. Doesn't show up because most of the feeds are limited as to how many episodes that they'll put up there. So I'm going back to some of my greatest hits, so to speak. It's kind of like the Handgun World Podcast Greatest Hits series. You can think of it that way. And once a month, I'm going to put up an older episode. Not all of them. You can always go to handgunworld.com, and you can always stream these episodes off of my website. Handgunworld.com, stream them off of my website. You have to have an internet connection. Well, you can actually download them to your smartphone or to your computer off of my website as well. Anyway, I've talked about that endlessly, so I'm not going to repeat it. The Glocks just have, you know, many advantages for me and for what I do. However, I'll say this. Today, right now, as I'm speaking and riding in the Handgun World luxurious high-tech mobile studio, I'm carrying a Smith & Wesson Shield 9mm, another one of my very, very favorite concealed carry handguns. I'm spending several hours in my car today, and it is a little bit more comfortable wearing a Smith & Wesson shield while I'm spending several hours in my vehicle, a little bit more comfortable than a G19 or a G17. So yeah, I've downsized my gun, and occasionally I do that. Not very often, but I do that. And that's just a personal choice I make. So let's not get too hung up on hand fit. I know people that don't buy a gun because it doesn't fit their hand. And I've heard lots of other people. I've heard hosts that run radio shows and other podcasts that will actually advise people not to buy a gun that doesn't fit their hand. And you know, that is not the only criteria that you should use. So I don't agree with people who give that advice. And I'm living proof of that because I regularly carry and shoot quite effectively a gun that doesn't fit my hand as well as other guns. And really, if you, like I said, if you go by the definition of whether it fits your hand or not, my SIG 229 Legion series does not fit my hand. But my last two range trips, I've been shooting it very well. Shooting is shooting, folks. And once you practice and once you learn how to handle guns, it's not too hard to learn how to shoot something that has a different trigger reach than something else. And that's primarily what you're analyzing when you're analyzing handgun fit. That's primarily. And don't forget, you can also modify grips on just about any gun. You know, 1911s. You can install different grip panels. You can put in thin grip panels, and you can make the grip smaller by putting in thin grip panels. You can make it larger by installing larger grip panels or grip panels that have palm swells. Okay, you can get rid of the flat mainspring housing in a 1911, and you can put in an arched mainspring housing. And by the way, John Browning originally designed the gun with a flat mainspring housing. He also designed the 1911 without a grip safety. I was watching, I think it was Guns and Ammo TV recently, and they actually went to, I forgot which museum it is, where the two original prototypes of John Browning are in this museum, I guess, or wherever it was that they were. The actual guns, the two prototypes that John Browning developed, I think they were like in 1905 or 1906. They did not have a manual thumb safety and had a flat mainspring housing. Okay? So, think about that. The manual thumb safety was added later. So was the grip safety. It was added later. But you can change 1911s. And polymer guns. Polymer guns are great. You can change those. They're very easy to change. You can have grip jobs done on Glocks. I got two Glocks that way that are in my ownership right now that Chris France from Citadel Armory in San Antonio, he's done those for me. He's done a magnificent job. If you want to check out his website, citadelarmory.net. He's not a sponsor. I don't financially gain anything. citadelarmory.net. Chris France. FRANTZ. And if you're in San Antonio, the San Antonio Austin area, you'll find him at most of the gun shows. But if you're not local here, you can probably contact him. Go to his website and contact him. He does very, very good work. And what I've had him do to two of my Glock 19s is take the finger grooves off the front. Now, I can shoot a Glock, a stock Glock, with finger grooves, no problem. And they don't bother me. I just like it a little bit better without the finger grooves. He doesn't reduce the size of the grip at all, so it's not really a grip reduction. He just takes the finger grooves off of the front, and I had him stipple Nice stippling. Really, really good job. He follows the factory outlines and everything. I had him stipple the front and the back. The front strap and the back strap. Not the side panels, because if I'm carrying that gun without a t-shirt, which is not often, but if I do, I don't want the side panels scratching my skin. I got my other G19, I had him stipple the side panels. And that's an okay gun. I can carry that when I'm wearing an undershirt. But if I'm not wearing an undershirt, then I carry the other Glock 19, the third gen Glock 19, that I just had him stipple the front and the back. And that, and now it's wonderful. Oh, and the most important thing on a grip job on a Glock, and even some of the other pistols that are polymer, is undercutting the trigger guard, where your middle finger on your shooting hand rests under the trigger guard, where your middle finger on your shooting hand rests. If he just enlarges that area a little bit, undercuts it. In other words, you know, he doesn't cut too much material off. Just enough for you to be able to get that middle finger up a little bit higher. Yes, I know. Stop thinking about what I know you're thinking about. Middle fingers up in the air. That's not what I'm talking about, folks. That's not what I'm talking about. But be able to get a higher grip on that pistol. That changes a little bit. Just doing the simple grip modifications that I just talked about helps a lot of people make a Glock fit your hand better. Or you can have it reduced. You can actually have the size of the grip reduced, and that might help your trigger reach just enough to where it'll fit your hand nicely. And people say, well, Bob, why would I want to do that? Why would I want to buy a Glock and pay somebody to make a grip modification when I can just buy a pistol of another brand that already fits my hand? You can do that. If that's what you want to do, fine. Like I said, I still retain all of the advantages of Glock pistols that I like, and I can make the grip any way, pretty much any way that I want to. But if the other advantages of Glock pistols are not important to you, then yeah, then go find a gun that you think fits better. But I can guarantee you, if you're the kind of person that says, hey, a Glock doesn't fit my hand, or a SIG doesn't fit my hand, if that's you, or if you say a Beretta doesn't fit my hand, if that's you, come to class, and I will guarantee you that by the end of the first day of the class, I'll teach you how to shoot that pistol effectively. I guarantee you that. You probably just haven't had proper instruction. Now, does this apply to everybody? No, there are always exceptions to everything, isn't there? I think we all know that. But in most cases, it's just a skill that you learn. There are all kinds of videos of small people shooting large guns and doing it quite well, because they've been taught how to do it properly. Now, you can also adjust triggers. Okay? You can, like if you have a SIG pistol, for example, I know you can send your SIG to a gunsmith, and you can have the gunsmith do some work on that to shorten the trigger reach a little bit. There are some guns where you can buy a trigger that you can replace that trigger and make it a shorter reach on the trigger. You can do that with 1911s. You can get triggers that have a shorter reach if you need a shorter trigger reach on a 1911. You know, that's rare. I mean, 1911s are known for having a short trigger reach and fitting people with smaller hands, and so I can't understand why someone would want to have it shorter, but there might be some out there that would. And so there are triggers like that available for 1911 pistols. You know, you can also have what's called short reset triggers. In my SIG Legion, it's got a short reset trigger. So after the first double action shot, there's a short reset on the follow-up single action shots. And that's nice. That's really nice. That's kind of cool. I like it. Now, for concealed carry purposes, you got to be careful. You got to be careful about radical modifications to a concealed carry gun that you're going to use for self-defense, radical modifications to the trigger. And I mean radical modifications. Like really lightening it a lot and really shorten the reset and making it as sensitive of a trigger as you possibly can and still keep the gun safe. I would not advise that, not for carry. For competition and for fun days at the range, go for it. But I wouldn't do that to a carry gun. There's several reasons I wouldn't recommend doing that to a carry gun. And let's not even think about liability right now. Let me talk about something else I've heard people say. If they say if they have too light of a trigger on their handgun, sometimes they're firing a shot when they don't want to. Think about that. Think about that. They're firing the shot too soon. In other words, maybe before they're completely on target where they want to be. What does that mean? Well, that means a miss occasionally. Or it means a hit not where you want to hit the bad guy. Maybe it means you didn't quite get a hit that's got a good potential to stop him because you pressed the trigger too soon. Because your trigger was too light. So think about that. I'll just tell you this. My Glocks don't fit my hand as well as other guns. And the triggers are not as good on my Glocks, my concealed carry Glocks, as they are on other guns. But I have shot a lot of different guns, folks. A lot of different guns. I've owned a lot of different types of guns. I have borrowed a lot of different types of guns. I've shot a lot of other people's guns. And I don't shoot any of them. I don't shoot any of them as well as a Glock 19 with a very slightly modified grip and a factory trigger with about 6,000 or 7,000 rounds shot through it, through the gun. That's just the way it is. Why? Why is that? Even a Glock that doesn't have a modified grip, I can still, when it comes to polymer guns, I can shoot those better than anything else, and I can shoot them. For me, I can shoot them as well as I can shoot any 1911 I've ever tried. Why is that? Well, probably because that's what I've practiced with the most. That's what I've trained with the most. Now, a finely tuned 1911, like even a 9mm 1911, if I practiced with one of those guns, with one of those handguns, as much as I practiced with my Glocks, I'm sure I'd shoot them just as well. But I haven't. And one of the reasons why I haven't shot a 1911 as much as my Glocks, for example, the biggest reason, let's see if you can guess it. Let's see if you can guess what is the number one reason why I haven't shot a 1911 anywhere near as much as I've shot a Glock 19. If you guessed ammo cost, you're right. If you guessed ammo cost and also the cost of the gun. Okay? When I was just getting started doing this, I didn't have as much available cash as I do now. And so getting a Glock or an M&P was a lot more economical, and because it shot 9mm... Hey, back when I first started doing this, a lot of stores would have CCI Blazer steel case 9mm sometimes on sale for $3.98 a box, for a box of 50. Seriously, I'm telling you that. When I was starting this back in 2005, 2006, sometimes it was about $4 a box for the real cheap 9mm practice ammo. And sometimes it would jump up to $5 a box, $4.98. And, you know, if I walked into a store and it was like $6 a box, I'd turn around and walk out and go to the next store where I could get it for anywhere from $4 to $5 for a box of 50. I'm serious. Well, those days are gone, unfortunately. They're gone. But at that time, that was a lot cheaper than 45 ACP. and even significantly cheaper than 40 caliber. Now, 40 caliber's come down in price a lot since then, since about 10 or 11 years ago. But at that time when I was starting, it was less. So naturally, what did I do? Well, I bought the Glock for less than $500. I bought the ammo at between $4 and $5 a box. And I was in business. And I could do lots and lots of shooting, lots of competition shooting, lots of training, lots of fun days at the range for not much money. And still today, comparatively, unless you reload, and even if you do reload, let me guess, reloaders, correct me if I'm wrong, set me straight, but it's still cheaper to reload 9mm than it is to reload 45 and 40, is it not? Especially trying to reload 45. Or what if you shoot some kind of a unique caliber, like you shoot 357 SIG? I understand that's not only expensive, but difficult to reload. That's why you don't see a lot of people shooting that caliber. Expensive to buy, expensive and hard to reload. So, these are things that you have to think about. And these are reasons why you can't just rely on handgun fit. Because even though a 1911 might fit your hand better, a 1911 could be a whole lot more expensive for you to purchase, and a whole lot more expensive for you to shoot, and much more expensive and harder to maintain than one of the polymer guns. So just think about that. You know, now, some of these small guns out there, I own four of them. The small single-stack 9mm, Smith & Wesson Shield, Glock 43, Walther PPS M2, Carr PM9. Those are likely to fit your hand. Those things fit 98% of people's hands. You know, because they're smaller. Now, when you start getting too small, then they become hard to shoot again. So, now you might have a gun that's way too small for you. It fits your hand. So I shouldn't say it's too small for you. It's a lot smaller than most guns, and it fits your hand, but now all of a sudden you've gone too far the other direction. The gun got too small, and now it's harder to shoot. So it fits your hand, right? The trigger reach is just fine. You can fit it in your hand, no problem, but now there's other reasons why it's harder to shoot. Why is it harder to shoot? Because it's lighter. Okay? It recoils more because there's not as much weight to soak up the recoil. It jumps around, moves around in your hand a lot. Another reason why sometimes it's harder to shoot. Because it moves around in your hand a lot. You know, or then, now, if you've gone too small for your hand, there's not as much grip surface. And so that makes it much more difficult to shoot and be accurate with it. And then a lot of these little tiny guns are in 380 caliber. Now, not the four I just mentioned or not, but there's a lot of them out there in 380 caliber. What does that mean? More expensive to shoot. 380 costs a lot more than 9mm. That's why I recommend that if you're going to get a small gun and you want it to be cost-effective and easy and cheap to shoot, get a Smith & Wesson Shield, get a Carr PM9, a Glock 43, or a Walther PPS M2. Or a Ruger LC9S Pro or whatever. The one without the thumb safety and the good trigger. You know, get those guns because they're 9mm. They're not 380s. And they'll fit your hand. And they'll be cost effective to shoot. They're cost effective to purchase. And they're cost effective and easy to maintain. Hey, a lot of these new guns, you know, they're resistant to abuse. They're resistant to people not cleaning them and abusing them and banging them around and things and dropping them in dirt and gravel and mud and all that. And they just keep on going. They're the Timex. They're the Timex of guns. They take lickings and keep on ticking. And, you know, so you have to understand that there are trade-offs in everything. And don't just go by hand fit. Okay, I think I made my point on that. So how about a quick break and either some kind of a little sound effect or an announcement, and then I'll be back.
A woman is approximately 10 times more likely to be successfully raped when she doesn't have a gun, according to a Department of Justice study. This explains why women in the United States use firearms about 200,000 times a year to stop sexual assaults. It also explains why more than 40% of women own or already have access to a firearm. So why do some politicians want to disarm women? Maybe rape isn't a serious enough crime in their minds. Or maybe they don't want to stare down the wrong end of your barrel.
Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, as I conclude this episode, something I said earlier in the previous segment about, you know, double taps and controlled pairs and things like that, or hammer pairs, whatever name you want to give it, there's two ways that you can try taking two shots. You can get a sight picture, press the trigger, get another sight picture, press the trigger again, and then get another sight picture. Or you can get a sight picture and then press the trigger twice real fast, bang, bang, and then get another sight picture. You know, I'm not a huge fan of the latter, okay, because the second shot tends to not hit the target. Now, you may not always get a complete sight picture, but at least you'll see your front sight after the first shot. You'll see the front sight start to come back towards being on target. You don't have to wait until it's exactly on target, but as long as you can see your front sight beginning to come back towards target and you've got the gun oriented in the proper position, you're probably going to get a decent hit. Now, again, I'm not talking about shooting tight groups. So, basically, it goes like this. You're going to get a sight picture, bang, sight picture, bang, and another sight picture. And you got to try to do that as fast as you can. Some people shoot like this. Sight picture, bang, bang, sight picture. And if you can do that, I would suggest practicing it both ways. If you can do that and you can make both shots count and get good hits, fine. I'm not saying there's a wrong or a right way to do it. And both can be done, and both can be done with skill. But learn that. And then that can create another problem, and that is people can create a bad habit of only shooting twice. You know, they practice the double tap, so they practice the control pair so much that they're used to shooting at the body only twice. Well, you might have to shoot more than twice. So, you know, it's been found that sometimes people will, especially, and this is something else, that if you spend too much time shooting a certain way, you could develop bad habits. You've got to really, really broaden your shooting skills. You got to be able to shoot three times or four times at one spot, and then maybe two or three times at another spot. And you might be shooting a total of 8 to 10 rounds, maybe even more. This, again, now it goes back to, well, what kind of capacity do you need? Well, maybe that 5-shot revolver is not enough. Maybe the 6-shot 380 is not enough. You see what I'm saying? So, anyway, in case I might have confused some people even further in the last segment, hopefully this clears it up. Well, folks, that's all. That's it for this episode. Don't forget, if you like my show, you know, I do have one sponsor, ConcealmentSolutions.com. ConcealmentSolutions.com, makers of some of the best outside the waistband and inside the waistband concealed carry holsters. Before you buy any holster, check out what they have at ConcealmentSolutions.com. I've got about, I think, 8 or 9 total holsters by Concealment Solutions. I'm really a big fan of the Cobra outside the waistband with the quick detach clips. I really like that holster. It's extremely concealable. What I like about it is that it's real easy to put on and take off, but the holster stays put until you decide to take it off. So there's not much of a problem with the holster coming out. And actually, I accidentally pushed one of the clips off my belt, but the other clip was on the was grabbing my belt so well that I was still able to draw my gun effectively. Jason has perfected the art of keeping the gun in place, but allowing it to come out quickly when you need it, when you draw it. And that's the mark of a good holster. So I recommend that, concealmentsolutions.com. The Shooters Club is also another way to support and also get some education. Just for $8 a month or $75 per year, you can watch about 55 videos that Ben Branham and I have put together. Good instructional videos on shooting, concealed carry, even AR-15s and AKs. $8 a month, $75 a year. If you sign up for an annual membership or renew your annual membership, by the end of May, you're going to get a free hat. And I'll email you instructions on how to get your free hat. So again, renew your membership or sign up for a new annual membership by the end of May and get a free Shooters Club or Handgun World podcast hat. You can go to Handgun World and you can check out the pictures of them. Last but not least, thank you for all the support, all of you that buy on my Amazon store. Hey, that's one way you can financially support me for my expenses and my time and everything that I put into this show every single week. Let Amazon pay me. If you're going to buy something on Amazon anyway, how about you just do two steps? First, go to handgunworld.com. Then go to my Amazon store. Do that first. Follow that link. Follow the directions on my Amazon page each time, and you're helping me out at the Handgun World podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I have learned by getting deeper and deeper into my Christian faith that evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. And with that said, thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.